Well, another book that has seen a bump in sales is George Orwell's 1949 novel, 1984. This week, 1984 topped Amazon's list of best-selling books, and its publisher ordered a 75,000-copy reprint. So we thought we'd take a closer look at 1984 with Petra Mayer of NPR Books. Hi, Petra.
Hey, Jeremy.
So for people like me who haven't read 1984 in quite some time now, remind us again of the plot of this book.
Sure. This is George Orwell's classic dystopian vision of a future. Well, it was the future when he wrote it in the late 40s, although 1984 is now the past for us. But a future dominated by three giant dystopian totalitarian superstates. And the story takes place in what was then England and is now Airstrip One. Winston Smith is the protagonist. He's kind of a workaday drudge. He works in the party's records department. The party is the organization that runs all of this. And he manipulates reality to suit the party's directives. And he harbors all these rebellious thoughts. And eventually he acts on them. And so the book is about what happens when he meets Julia, who becomes his lover, and they both begin to rebel against the party. And I feel like it's not a spoiler to say it doesn't end well.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why this book has become popular all of a sudden once again is because last weekend, Kellyanne Conway, a senior White House official, went out there and started talking about alternative facts. And a lot of commentators referred to that as Orwellian. Why?
Sure. Orwellian is an adjective that gets tossed around a lot, but that's because it applies very frequently to politics. In this case, one of the threads running throughout the book is the idea that that reality is only what we say it is. And in this case, reality is what the party says it is. So if the party says 2 + 2 = 5, then 2 + 2 = 5. The sort of salient quote from the book is, he who controls the past controls the future. He who controls the present controls the past. So if you can remake reality according to what you want it to be, then you stay in control. And I think when Kellyanne Conway offered what she called alternative facts, that's where a lot of people's minds went.
Why do you think this book continues to resonate after all these years? It is still often required reading in high school and college classes.
Well, it has so many different layers. I mean, you can look at it on the level of a story, and it's, you know, my story about this book is that I first read it when I was 9 years old. Blame my dad. He handed it to me. It was the summer of 1984, so he thought I was ready to read it. So I read it. I was 9, and I didn't understand any of the political underpinnings, but I understood the story, and I understood the world building. So you can just read it as the tragic story of Winston and Julia. You can read it as a historical document because it was written at the time when, you know, Soviet domination over Eastern Europe was starting to be cemented, and it was definitely a reaction to that. And then you can also read it as a political treatise. You know, by the time I was a teenager, because I kept rereading the book, and if you've read it, you know that the middle sections are full of basically a long political science book describing the underpinnings of this totalitarian state and the party's aims. And there are a lot of things in there that are applicable to a lot of different situations. People talk about, of course, you know, one of the other central tenets of this society is constant surveillance. So that gets tossed around a lot whenever there's an issue with surveillance.
Big Brother is watching you.
Right. Big Brother is watching you. Of course, that's the money quote from the book. So there's just so much in it. It's just this ever unfolding thing that you can keep going back to.
And you went back to it again last night. What was it like to reread it again for this conversation?
It was like visiting an old friend. I mean, an old, weird, grim, depressing friend. But the thing with me for the book is that I find something new every time I reread it. And so this time around, I noticed some parallels between scenes in the beginning and the end of the book that I felt like a dummy for not having noticed
before. Like what?
Oh, in the beginning of the book, Winston remembers seeing some old party cadres in a cafe, sort of after they had been purged and had a show trial and confessed, and then they were broken men and they're sitting in this cafe. And a very specific sequence of events happens, and then it's mirrored at the end of the book where Winston himself, having been, you know, arrested and tortured into subservience, is now sitting in the same cafe with the same expression on his face. And it's a very powerful bookend to the story. And I don't know why that had never stood out to me before, because it's pretty obvious when you read it. But so it's things like that. I always notice something new.
That's Petra Mayer of NPR Books talking with us about George Orwell's 1984, which has shot up to the top of Amazon's best-selling books list. Petra, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Well, 1984 has appeared in popular culture many times since its publication. In the year 1984, there was Apple's groundbreaking Super Bowl ad for the Macintosh computer. That year, there was also the film adaptation of the book, starring John Hurt as Winston and Richard Burton as a high-ranking party member.
There is no loyalty except loyalty to the party. There is no love except love of Big Brother. All competing pleasures we will destroy.
In 1974, David Bowie released Diamond Dogs. The album contains several songs inspired by the George Orwell book, including this one.
Someday they won't let you. Now you must agree. The times they are a-telling and the changing isn't free. You've read it in the tea leaves and the tracks are on TV. Beware the savage shore. 1984.
David Bowie, inspired there by George Orwell's book 1984, which is back at the top of the charts on Amazon.